Hello, I'm Kenlyn Christopherson, and welcome to Band Together, a six-part series exploring how different music teachers foster positive classroom cultures in their band room. In this series, I interview six band teachers and discuss their general views on a positive culture and what strategies they use to implement it. This first episode features Michael Brandon, and we co-teach at a large, rural Manitoba comprehensive high school. I thought this would be a good place to start because we've spent a lot of time planning, implementing, and reflecting on different strategies that directly impact the culture of our band room. Because we've taught together for about 10 years now, the discussion is both broad and specific, both idealistic and pragmatic, and both strategic and reflective. And when we use this word strategic, we don't mean it in a manipulative or cunning way, but rather in a more literal one where we develop a plan, or a strategy, if you will, and implement it, then reflect on it over time. The theme of reflection comes up a lot in this discussion. I also wanted to start this project with Michael and I's conversation because he was the catalyst in all of my research. If it weren't for his perspective, his reflection, and his vision for building a program through culture and musical quality, I wouldn't be teaching in the way that I am today. I owe a lot of this to him. Here's our conversation. Michael Brandon is the senior instrumental music teacher at Lord Selkirk Regional Comprehensive Secondary School in Selkirk, Manitoba. Michael, thank you so much for speaking to me today.
My pleasure.
Mm-hmm. So let's jump right in. When we are talking about culture in the band room, what does that make you think of?
Culture for me is the way of being, doing, and thinking in my space, in the program. So it includes things from us as the leaders, being, doing, and thinking, like what we believe and what kids believe, what they're bringing. So we make a decision about culture. So Kenley and I teach together. So we decide together what we want the culture to be, what the ideal or desirable culture could be, and that's our concept together. And then backwards, we think about, well, what does that look like? What does that feel like? And then what are we doing in the imagined culture? What are the kids doing? What are we doing? And that's, of course, when things are going really well. This is idealistic. And then we build it, we manage it, we practice it, we teach the ways of being, doing, and thinking to the best of our ability. So I think culture is taught. It's taught like curriculum.
Right.
Because culture is a decision. What do we want it to be? And then we build it. We make it happen. And that involves like this idea of teach, practice, reteach, practice, reteach, practice, reteach, practice that we use to teach anything.
Mm-hmm.
We do that with culture too. And then I have some thoughts like it has to be done in an authentic way, mm-hmm. right? So it has to be us doing it from our own platform, our own beliefs, not somebody else's, although we can steal other people's beliefs and say, well, that resonates with me too. That's important to me. But it has to be authentic. It can't be phony or overdone or they won't believe us, mm-hmm. right? If it doesn't feel like that's part of my personality, they won't believe us. You mm-hmm. know, it works well for us. We're so different. We present in different ways. I can't pretend to be you mm-hmm. and do your thing, and you can't pretend to be me. We have to be ourselves.
Right.
Which I think is part of good teaching, too. And I think culture is separate from pedagogy in many ways, although culture affects how the students respond to pedagogy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're two different things. So you can be very skilled at teaching, concepts, rhythmic concepts, musical concepts, and not even give a thought about culture. And I think you can be really good at culture and not be skilled with teaching rhythm,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that they're separate. So they're kind of two wheels that spin together that are important. So I think culture is the container within which all the learning and teaching happens. So I have some thoughts like a culture of inclusion, a culture of quality, a culture of growth, a culture of kind and well-mannered people, culture of collaboration, mentorship, leadership, enjoyment, culture of love and learning,
mm-hmm.
a culture where one craves feedback. Like all of that can be a part of the way of being and doing and thinking in the space.
Right. I want to go back to something you said earlier when we talked about managing. I love that because you don't just build it and let it go.
No.
It's something you maintain every day.
It is because the kids are always changing. I mean, if you think year to year, a third of your program goes.
Mm-hmm.
So the incoming need to be taught. But day to day, kids change and emotions are in play and their lives are in play. So there's stuff to manage. There's always stuff to teach. You don't decide that the kids will be kind and well-mannered.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You decide you would like that to be the culture or a part of the culture. And then there's teaching to be done. You're intervening when they're not kind and well-mannered, and you're teaching them how to treat each other in the space and how we do things here. You know, like, we don't yell at each other, or there's a way to give feedback to each other musically. Or when someone is playing out a tune, you don't stare at them with a horrible, you know, face and make them feel horrible. There's ways of communicating things. So it doesn't need to be managed. We talk about taking the temperature.
Yeah. Taking
the
temperature
every now and then. And you don't want to obsess about it. Like, you can't be like obsessed every day about it, but you must be mindful of it, I think. Right?
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of the kids and how you talked about the students, what might the students experience in an ideal day in your bandroom culture?
When they walk in, I want them to feel relaxed. I want them to feel welcome. I want them to feel like that space is, you know, a part of their day and a good part of their day, a place where they want to be. I want them to come into a rehearsal and say, "Ah, oh, thank God I have a rehearsal. Like, I'm craving that experience. I like how I feel when I'm here." They feel a sense of wanting to contribute, wanting to play, wanting to be musical, wanting to be challenged. And they experience adults, I think. This is a part of the culture, is how do they interact with us? So what is it like when they walk in the room? What do I want them to experience? I want them to experience me in a positive way. And I mean, I'm only human and that doesn't always happen, but I need to be mindful of the fact that when the kids come in the room, they're interacting with me. And at a very basic level, culture can be sort of defined too as, what are you even like to be around?
Right.
What is Brandon even like to be around? And if he's not very nice to be around, that's the culture.
Right.
That's going to set the tone. That's going to set the culture. You may have high standards, but you're not even very nice to me. So that affects everything. That changes everything. I want them to rely on us. I want them to feel safe taking risks. I want them to want to explore unfamiliar territory. And I want them to want to be around the other kids in the program. I want them to want to be a part of the experience socially, musically. I also don't want the culture to be insular. I don't want the band culture to just be in the band room. I want it to sort of spill. Otherwise, you create, I think, an experience that's separate from their high school experience, and I want it to be integrated.
We've talked about this. This is going to sound like a leading question, where I kind of become your co-teacher and less about the interviewer. But when we talk about that, or rather, we talk about taking this experience into your daily life, into your job, into your parents, like, you know, you might talk to us one way and talk to your parents another way, but what if you treated the adults with the kindness you treated us? What if you treated your job space, the place where you work, in the same capacity that you treat the band room, that you respect the band room? Maybe you could respect your dining room, you could respect your house, you could respect where you work, your grandma's house. You know, I mean, we've said too, you know, speak in the band room the way you speak at your grandma's house. It doesn't take much, but you just have to say it.
You just have to remind them. You're just nudging them in a direction. And they already know things like this, right?
Right.
These aren't new concepts, but these are some of the life skills. These are some of the outcomes that are non-musical outcomes that help build great people. And I think music programs do that very well, if we're mindful of some of those concepts. Because, I mean, if you're going to have a group that doesn't know how to speak to each other or us, like, how does that translate into a collaborative experience? So now we have challenges, right? There are things that just need to be in place to have a great experience in the music room. And if you can do it in the music room, you're set for life.
Right.
Because if you can collaborate as a teenager in a music room, you're set, right? You can collaborate. That's a big skill. If you can talk to other adults like you would at your grandmother's dining room table, you're going to be okay in a professional meeting on your first time, because you have this skill set. You have these situational behaviors that you've developed. Well, how do I operate in a rehearsal? How do I navigate this program? Because they're not sitting at home on their couch with their friends. They're in our space. They're working. There are demands. There are ways of being and doing and thinking that I think translate into great life skills, relationship skills, job skills, all sorts of things.
Right. So this might sound like an obvious question, but it's important to ask. Is the culture of the band room, positive or negative, something that you think about on a regular basis?
It has to be something you think about on a regular basis. It has to be. The culture of the program is the platform on which everything sits. That's the platform. That's the concrete. And you have to be mindful of it on a regular basis, but not obsess about it. I think you can obsess about things. And I think that's a waste of time. Being mindful is enough, but it needs to be regular. And building a new culture, like when we came together and we decided what our culture would be together, That requires constant attention and teaching, more so than maintaining an existing culture. So when you and I manage our culture, or when we think about culture, we do it less frequently now than we did in the first 5 years.
Right.
Like the first 5 years, I think we were talking about it like every day on our preps. We were just always talking about culture, always building, always managing, always noticing, thinking about what we needed to do. Mm-hmm. But I think maintaining a tradition of culture takes more of a bird's eye view of the ingrained behaviors and how students are responding, particularly the younger ones coming in, because there's mentorship involved, right? So there's maybe less teaching and more of a bird's eye managing, taking the temperature. But you can't forget about it because it changes in a second.
Exactly.
It can change in a day. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions you ask that refers to that, it can change in a moment and then last. And if you're not mindful of it and if you're not thinking about the culture, you don't even notice that it may be deteriorating until it's too late.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important. Regular basis. Take the temperature.
What are some student indicators that the culture is positive?
So for me, the visible things that I see, if things are really cooking and the culture is what we need it to be, what we've decided that it should be, could be, you're going to see leadership, you're going to see mentorship, you're going to see respectful relationships, you're going to see and hear accountability with their parts. I mean, they will just hold themselves to a higher standard because that's the way we do things in this ensemble. Mm-hmm. You'll see emotional responses of the kids. That's a great indicator. Like when you look at your band, do you really see them and are they okay?
Yeah.
They might not be okay. Mm-hmm. And it might be about something you're doing.
Yeah, it
might be about something you have no control over. But if I'm sharing an energy of intensity, impatience, disapproval in a manner that is inappropriate when I don't need to. I mean, I can share disapproval when there's bad behavior going on. That's effective management. But if I'm sharing that consistently and I'm making them feel that they're not even welcome or that I don't even like them, that's damaging. And I may not be aware of it if I'm not thinking about culture and if I'm not looking at the kids. If when they come in and you say, are you okay? Are you okay? Mm-hmm. You have to notice them. Because sometimes they're not okay. And sometimes it's because of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? You've said something. I can be curt. Sometimes the sarcasm comes back in and I might hurt someone's feelings unintentionally. And I don't even know that I owe someone an apology. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Because when you're talking about disapproval, and we've talked about this a lot, like we're talking about behavior, we're not talking about people.
Right.
We're not disapproving of the person,
no,
but of the actions. And I mean, sometimes when things are repetitive, like if you're addressing the same behavior over and over and over again, if someone comes in late with fries, 10 rehearsals in a row, you know, it's hard to separate that sometimes, but we have to, right? Because if we're going to maintain a culture of inclusiveness, we have to always be addressing behavior and not people.
Always. And you have to make that distinction because they will take it personally.
Right.
It's really important to clarify because they're insecure. They're adolescents. You have to know the adolescent brain. You have to predict how they will respond to certain things and clarifying, listen, this isn't you. This is what you're doing. Or if you're telling them that there's a lack of accountability, we're talking about the fact that you haven't prepared the way we had hoped you might have prepared. What can we do about that instead of just, you know, sharing with them that you disapprove of them, that their accountability is not intact, and then not laying out a strategy because we're teachers. So if you're going to say something that's honest and true about what they have or haven't done that is maybe not in line with the culture or the way of doing, there has to be pavement in front of it.
Yeah, right.
There has to be teaching. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're just giving them negative feedback.
Yeah.
Right? It's strategic. you say you're not doing this. Here's what I need. Here's how we're going to do it. Here are ways to find your way through that and navigate that.
Right. So what about some negative indicators for students now that we're talking about it?
Negative indicators, I think, apathy. I mean, some of them are maybe obvious. They come in, they don't want to work. The sound isn't there. They're not willing to engage. Poor behavior. We don't see that at high school as much, but disengagement of some sort. Junior high, you see poor behavior all the time. And it's, I think, a lot about culture, a lot about the adolescent brain, too, at that stage. But if the culture is demanding and awesome and engaging and enjoyable, there's just less bad behavior. So poor behavior, I think, allowing for normal poor behavior from kids in schools. That's just part of growing up. Defensive or angry responses.
Ah, yeah.
Right? That you're like, well, that's weird that you responded that way.
Yeah.
I wonder why. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a reason. And it's up to us to figure out what that might be. And we might have control over that. Maybe it's something in the culture. Maybe there's bullying going on that I'm not looking at. There's all sorts of things that I need to look at there. Absenteeism, lack of accountability, lack of connection with the community, with the kids in the program. So if you see kids that are more isolated, I mean, that goes against our ideas of inclusion.
Right.
So if someone is isolated, there's work to be done with the rest of the group, you know, not drawing attention to them, but maybe drawing attention to the concept of inclusion and when to reach for somebody, and somebody needs you to reach for them. So do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? A lack of leadership. Mm. I can't get any volunteers to do anything. Or we're tearing down the concert and where did everyone go?
Yeah.
Where is everyone? They were expected to stay and help and they did or they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes you can affect that and sometimes you can't. But I think that's an indicator. We've had some great experiences where we've talked to people after a concert and then 10 minutes later you turn around and everything is upstairs.
Yeah.
In 10 minutes. Well, that takes 50, 80 kids working together. That's a great sign of good culture.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, we've also had times where we were chasing kids. Why are you running away?
Yeah.
Right? I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lack of quality. I think if they don't care enough to create quality, something's going on. Because you can always pick the right rep. You can always pick rep that gives you amazing quality or access to amazing quality. So if you can't get it, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Right? We should be able to do and produce some sort of quality. So I think that's a pretty strong indicator.
Definitely. So we've talked about the culture indicators from the kids, but what about from us? Can you describe a time where the culture was represented in your actions?
Okay, like a positive culture, I started with negative because I have this one event in my career that really came out strongly when I was thinking about this, but I'll start with the positive.
Such a teacher.
Start with the positive. I think that, so I'm standing by the door as much as I can. I'm greeting kids as much as I'm calling them by name. Like, I'm smiling with them. I'm noticing them. I'm honest with them about quality. Like, I try to be myself. Professionally, I want to clarify that, too. Like, they're not my friends.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say be authentic and I want to be, you know, warm and welcoming, I'm working, right?
Yeah.
I have a clear clarification between that and making sure that they don't think that I'm their friend either. And being willing to hear them and listen to them, sharing approval of who they are. We talked about that, right? That we're not talking about you as a person. I approve of you, right? You'll tell me who you are and I will accept you,
yeah,
no matter what. Challenging them with new ideas, musical and non-musical, trying to inspire them, helping them believe in themselves, being interested in them. I think all of those behaviors from us lay pavement in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to do that as much as you can. Now, life's not perfect and the job is ridiculous. So you can't always be at the door, but you can mostly be at the door.
Right.
You can't always listen to them. You have to teach, but you can sometimes listen to them. Right.
Yeah.
And those moments present where you know this is really important to spend 30 seconds with this kid because they're telling you some story about something important to them and you know that they got picked up from school and they missed the bus and my mom was mad. But the fact that you even bothered to listen,
yeah,
that behavior from us is strategic. Mm-hmm. It shows them that we care. I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
The negative one. Can I talk about the negative
one? Oh, I'm so excited to hear
it. Okay, I'm sure you remember, but there was a time we were rehearsing. It was the year we were doing Ghosts of Imi.
Okay.
For Remembrance Day. And my dad was sick and struggling, in and out of hospital. And I brought to school an enormous lack of awareness of my own emotional state, my own interactions with kids. I wasn't even thinking about all the things I believed in because my emotions were high.
Right.
And that may be an excuse. That's real life. But those kids in Concert Band 40 signed up for a course. So for an hour, I should have been delivering to the best of my ability a great experience to them. But instead, what I did day after day was share with them disapproval, impatience. They were never good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I was irritated. I was angry, and of course, none of it had anything to do with them. And I created, this is how it changes in a minute, I created a culture in that class every second day that they didn't like and that they didn't want to participate in. And there was absenteeism, and we weren't getting anywhere. And instead of laying pavement and thinking strategically and pedagogically and culturally, I just got impatient, and I made it their fault. Except I was the adult at the front of the room. So It took a brave parent that I knew through the Music Parents Association to come into my office and say, Mike, I need to share with you that your band is very unhappy, and it's all over social media, and they want to drop band, and they're not having a good time, and on it goes. But I created it, right? It wasn't them. It was me. So in a second, thank goodness that person had the wherewithal to come and share that with me. That just speaks to good relationships, I think, in your program and in your parent program too, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. So she informs me of the reality in front of me that I missed day after day after day, missed it. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, I need to make a change. So the first thing I did was offer those kids an apology, which they accepted. Mm-hmm. And then I changed the culture. I had to be sure that I was who I needed to be instead of angry about my dad being in the hospital, right? So that was a powerful moment because that's real life. Mm-hmm. Like, we have things that get in the way and we're not perfect. But I let that go for weeks. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I wasn't mindful. So someone helped me.
Yeah.
And then I was able to shift that culture pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But I could have destroyed that concert band all year. I could have lost a quarter of them. And then I wonder, what's going on in the music program? What's happening with these kids? It's me. Mm-hmm. It's the culture I'm setting. It's the tone I'm setting.
Yeah. And we hear that too, right? We hear like, oh, those damn kids, those whatever. And like, you know, not from us too, but I mean, like throughout our careers, I've heard that a lot. Like, oh, I've got this terrible class and I've dot, dot, dot. And it goes on and on and on. But you know, when we take a hard look in the mirror, as I remember you saying many times, everywhere you go, there you are.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the mirror is a very important tool.
Truth. Okay. So, now switching back to the students, can you describe a time where the culture was represented in the students' actions?
So I think I have four big things here. So one of them is our Remembrance Day service. Mm-hmm. And not only the sort of the quality that we're able to bring, and I mean, it's not always perfect, but I think the tone that the kids bring to that service, mm-hmm. Is a behavior that is a reflection of our culture. Mm-hmm. Like, that's an important moment.
You mean personal tone, not musical tone?
Their personal tone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, we are being of service here. This is not our performance. This is not for us. This is for everybody else and for what was. And it's so meaningful. Of course, that's taught too. But then they bring it. Then they understand. Even though the quality of the setup and the teardown, when I ask for a leadership team and I have 20 kids that want to volunteer to set up the lights and be in charge, and I think that's an example of they've really invested. They've really bought in and they believe in what we're selling, right? All of these amazing qualities we're trying to put to the foreground. Camps are great. We see that all the time in camps. Like the general behavior at camp, the inclusion that we see at camp, which of course is taught. Nothing is accidental. You want a group to be inclusive, you got to teach them how to be inclusive. And you got to teach them what it looks like when you're not inclusive.
Yeah.
Like, well, where's so-and-so? They're not by the bonfire. So the answer is, it's not who cares. It's let's go see if they're okay. Let's bring them, right? Let so-and-so doesn't have a place to sit. You see them wandering around the dining hall. They don't know where to sit. Well, that's an opportunity to invite.
Right.
Rather than let's see where they sit. No, you invite them. You reach for them. Of course, that's taught too. We always get comments at camp from the staff like, oh, your kids are so polite. Well, we tell them you should thank the kitchen staff. Mm-hmm. And then the staff is taken aback.
Yeah.
That these kids are so polite. Well, isn't that amazing that they're so amazed that the kids are so polite?
Because all it does is to mention that to the kids.
You just have, yeah.
And just consistent reminder.
You just remind them.
Yeah, it's like we had a unit plan about being polite.
No. No. And of course, it's all personality driven. Mm-hmm. So especially you, me too, but especially you, kindness and manners are paramount.
They are.
And sometimes they're lacking. And we're in a position to help. Mm-hmm. Like, we're teachers. So you can embed that in your day just by including a reminder. Mm-hmm. Willingness to volunteer. So we do Manitoba Housing Christmas parties for the last couple of years here in Selkirk. I've got a couple of kids that are scheduled to go out into personal care homes in the next little while. We took part in a holiday Christmas celebration in the community, a new Holiday Alley experience. We had performers out, and I had zero problems getting volunteers.
Amazing.
Who would like to go to the Manitoba Christmas party, the housing Christmas party? Well, I got too many kids, so I bring too many kids because they want to be there.
That's a great problem to have.
That's a great problem to have. Too many volunteers in the community. Well, that's what's happening. And That's just what we do.
Right.
We're just going to go and play at that Manitoba Housing Christmas party. And we don't just go and play and then come home. They're prepped. Well, what are we going to? And why are we going? Mm-hmm. And why is our presence of such value? Mm-hmm. And how do we contribute to these people's lives? And then we hear feedback from them about what a difference it made. So then you share that with the kids, and now they understand that that is a contribution to their community. It could just be a performance. They go out and play some Christmas carols and then come back and we give them Tim Hortons and then that's it. Mm-hmm. But if it's more than that, it teaches more than that.
And I think what you're describing is being willing to have a conversation, like a real authentic conversation with a real authentic person.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, barking down orders at the kids. Like, you're really engaging them. You're really intentionally setting something up.
That's right.
And then debriefing afterward.
Laying pavement in a direction.
Exactly.
Being
exactly.
Intentional.
I also appreciate how all the things you said were related to music, but not specifically about music. Like, you didn't say they practiced. Mm-hmm. They prepared for the whichever. They learned their part for the concert. And I mean, those are great byproducts of all the things that you talked about.
Yeah.
Right. And so sometimes I worry that in our profession, myself totally included in this, that we put the cart before the horse and how are we going to get this ready for the jazz festival or BAMF or whatever. And instead, I'm trying to do the byproduct instead of focus on the thing that sets the kid up for success with this wonderful byproduct of preparation, of learning your part, of great performance.
Right. It's about the process. I mean, yes, the performance is important.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody wants to come and hear a band at the festival, or they don't want their band to go to the festival and play 60% of the notes correct and say, but yeah, but we had a great time.
Exactly.
Right? The quality is important. That's part of the music education experience. But the process is where it's at. It's about mm-hmm. the day-to-day. Do you know how to put that long-term goal together in the music room? Because if you do, if you've got the patience and the long-term skills, because it's not instant, what a gift that is to kids.
Right.
I mean, if you can do that in a music program, you can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not even about, we go to BAMF, we go to a festival. It's not about that. You get kids skipping rehearsal. They're missing the point. It's mm-hmm. not about the trip. It's about getting to the trip. It's about learning how to put that together.
Yeah.
That's the lesson, right? And if you take care of the process, the product takes care of itself sometimes.
That's right. The product takes care of itself. I want to jump back to what you're saying about camp and BAMF and some of the less regular or long-term activities. So what are some of those that maintain a positive program culture?
We have quite a few things. So we do showcases, which are like a talent show a couple times a year, which brings out sometimes the most unlikely talents that mm-hmm. you don't know about. We do a performing arts barbecue at the beginning of the year to help kids meet each other and just have fun, feed them some hamburgers and hot dogs and give them some drinks and chips, and then send them out to the field to play.
Mm-hmm.
Let them play together. Let them meet each other.
And let the grade 12s have some student leadership in that too, of organizing the games and getting that ready and meeting the young kids. Like, start the mentorship early.
Set the tone, right? The kids can set the tone too. They're the established members of the group.
Right.
So what a great environment for young kids to come in and see the way of being and doing out in the back. It's like, oh, we're kind of like a family. Like, everyone knows everyone's names. We wear name tags. It's kind of like, oh, we're supposed to get to know each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an expectation without saying you are expected to meet. You just set them up
yep.
to meet each other and to accidentally have fun together. Trips, I think, but trips can be tricky. I think trips can sometimes be, depends how many trips you do. This year, I feel like maybe our groups expect the trip
mm-hmm.
more than when we first started to travel. How lucky are we to get to go? And what do we have to do to make this great? And now it's kind of like, well, we're going to BAMF. Here's the money.
Mm-hmm.
And they're forgetting about the process.
Right.
Right. So there's so much work to do. But trips can be a big part of that too. I think that quality is a long-term thing that also is important in culture. Right. Because you don't just come to school and create quality in your rehearsal. That's long-term. Collaboration with other departments. Right? We have groups like your combo would play at open house or you know, something at a PD day. Pit band for the musical if we have one. Special performances. The Lord Selkirk School Division turned 50 last year or the year before. And, okay, well, we have performances that speaks about they want us. It's important. This is a real honor. I mean, that's good for mm-hmm. a program's culture.
And just, you know, to clarify, because Mike and I have inside information here, that performance was at 9 a.m. on a Saturday. I think the Saturday after spring break.
I think so.
Or something like that. And we thought, like, oh, I hope some kids show up. And everyone came. Like,
everyone showed up.
I mean, of course, like, when we spoke after, we thought, of course they showed up. But, I mean, on the Sunday, I thought, man, I'm sure glad they all showed up. I mean, like, Saturday after spring break is a tough sell. But there they were.
There they were. And they did a bang-up job.
Yeah, it was great. We had a great show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's part of the culture, though.
Yeah.
Right? If you didn't have a long-established and practiced, because it took us a long time to build that, Kenley, right?
Yeah, that's true.
We didn't do that in 3 years. And we're so vigilant at maintaining our consistency mm-hmm. with culture, then that's just kind of what you do.
Yeah.
The symphonic band has a performance. And they may not like it. And we didn't want to get up on Saturday. We were like, oh, my gosh. But we did it, and they were all there. And it was amazing, right?
Yeah, and it was a great show.
It was a great show.
And they all hung out and had pancakes after. Yeah, they didn't just do it and leave. But it's exactly what you said. You know, it's maintained. It's worked over years. It takes a long time to build, and it takes even longer to, not to keep building it, but to make sure the machine stays running.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we've danced around this a bit, but let's cut right to the chase. So what role do you, as teacher and conductor, have in setting the culture of the room?
The entire program is delivered by the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
All of it. So programs are personality driven. So it's going to look like you. It's going to represent what you think are important. But you're responsible for everything. I think everything comes back to the podium. So if things are good, it comes back to the podium. So as you're reflecting, you're like, okay, that worked really well today. Why did that happen? Mm-hmm. And figure out what you did or didn't do, sometimes it's what you didn't do, that allowed something to be awesome. And then when things go awry and things are a mess, instead of blame, you do your reflection. Okay, so what did I do or not do that allowed that outcome to appear? Because I don't want that. And you got to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can figure that out over time, then you build this skill set of pedagogical skills and cultural skills based on what you believe is right for your program. Because all of our programs look and feel different. That's important.
Mm-hmm.
But it all comes from us. I think it's easy to blame the kids. I mean, I blame the kids too. That rehearsal was terrible. They were unfocused. They were, and that's true. They're people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one of you and there's 40 of them. But you're the adult in the room. Like, this is an experience. They're in a course.
Mm-hmm.
They signed up for a course. You're running the course. It's not some club. So that's a burden of responsibility to be an educator in a community. You're in charge. So if you really believe you're in charge of the experience, you can take responsibility for what's working and what isn't. And I think all of it falls on us. Like, what a burden, right?
Mm-hmm. I think we have to be a little bit patient with each other too, as we assess blame, because we also don't want to get in the situation where, you know, you have a few bad days and, you know, you're crying in your office. But you're right, though. We have to be objective in our reflection, and we need to look at what really happened there, right? Like, if the behavior is getting out of control, it could very well be that your discipline was a little bit loosey-goosey that day, and that's what happens. But on the flip side, if you have a rehearsal devoid of fun and enjoyment, then your discipline might have been a bit heavy-handed that day. So the Goldilocks zone, right, of not too much and not too little.
That's right.
For all the things that we're doing.
And we're so gentle with the kids when they make mistakes. We have to do that in our own reflection when we make mistakes, because mm-hmm. we're learning. And when I say, you know, reflect over time, I'm talking about a career. I'm not talking 5 years. I'm talking about as you do this job,
mm-hmm.
you reflect. You know, and you have, and sometimes you got tough groups, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes no matter what you do, this group is just tougher than other groups.
Mm-hmm.
So then that falls on us again. Now we have to adapt. Okay, what needs to change so that I can get the experience for this group mm-hmm. to be intact? Because they deserve it too. They still signed up for Concert Band 40. So right. if they're tougher, well, that's me now needing to differentiate instruction
mm-hmm.
or think about all the different, I mean, think about UDL and backward planning. Well, what am I going to do then?
Yeah, exactly.
Because this isn't working. What I usually do doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
The culture is shifting. Oh, then we need to do something.
Right.
We need to figure them out.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's the job. And I think that's a heavy job, but that's the job, right? If this group doesn't read rhythm that well, then you need to figure out how to teach them rhythm.
Right.
So if this group is having trouble with, you know, cultural ideas, Well, you need to do the best you can to try and impart that on them. Like, what do they need? Where is the problem here? Mm-hmm. Right? And take it seriously and just do the best you can.
Right.
But you got to go easy on yourself. Otherwise, you just drive yourself crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of a, it's a control freak's dream, I sometimes say, right? Because I'm talking about being in charge and we're the ones that control everything. Mm-hmm. And we are. It's a construct, mm-hmm. right? The program is a construct. The high school is a construct. We decide what it's going to be, what it's going to look like, what the courses are, what the experience will be. The athletic program has their construct. But within that construct, we're people too.
Right.
Right.
And
but
so
we
they.
Have a big role.
Yeah. I think too about how we have to also let things play out in time. I remember when we started really rethinking how we taught rhythm maybe 2 or 3 years ago and how we put such a focus on it in rehearsal, especially in the first semester. And we have to let it play out. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, there are days where, you know, you get to the rep 10 minutes left of class, but all of a sudden in February, they can all read 6-8 like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I, thinking in November, man, this sure is a lot of rhythm, but you have to let it play out so that they get to the destination and then see how that destination feels. Because, man, it sure is nice to have a band that can read rhythm.
It sure is. But, you know, life takes time to play out, right, Kenley?
Yeah.
Life takes time to play out. Rhythmic concepts take time to play out. Music programs take time to play out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we start teaching together in 2009, and then in the spring of 2010, we don't say, so how'd we do?
Yeah.
Right? It takes time to play out. And then we said before, you and I, the machine, let's just let the machine work for a while. Like, let's just let this go. You don't build. Now let's just let it play out.
Yeah.
To steal your language.
Exactly. So we've talked a lot about how we play a role, the role, a dominant role in the in manifesting a positive culture at the band room. But what about music? Is there something about music specifically?
It is. I think music is... music is why we do the job, right? It's so amazing. It's the musical moments. It's that little bright light that happens once every, I don't know when. It's not constant. It's mm-hmm. not on all the time that keeps us there. So I think music plays a huge role. I think music is powerful. The right choices are important. I mean, if you're talking about the role of music, we're talking about how the kids are responding and interacting with music. You know, not like, oh, I like that song. No, beyond that,
mm-hmm.
right? The experience, you want to play this piece over and over again, you've worked so hard on it, what's the why behind that? What's going on with those kids, like at an intimate emotional level that brings them into the room, right? We experience that in our older groups especially,
mm-hmm.
where the moment that they just want to experience over and over again is a musical moment. It interacts with their emotional center. It's beyond the technique. It's beyond mechanics. It's that X factor. And I like to think that when we get there, that it changes them,
mm-hmm.
right? And sometimes I say, the music has revealed itself to you now, right? You've prepared so much that you don't have to think anymore. And now the music is actually accessible. Now the music has revealed itself. And if you get to that point with a group, you've got them,
right?
They feel it. Now they know what you've been talking about mm-hmm. as an adult. And they experience it too. You know, with their iPod, with their favorite song, they reach for music for a reason. There are certain things they want to hear at certain times. And if we pick the right rep that's nutritious, right, then the music, in fact, plays the biggest role.
Because mm-hmm.
that's why they're there. They want to feel that. Right. Mm-hmm. And when it's sometimes in symphonic band, if it's not happening, they get frustrated. Because it's good, but it's not good enough to shimmer or to spark. And that's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get there, and I think everyone can get there, because there's always a piece of rep that is accessible for any group.
Yeah,
right?
There's always something. And especially when we model the chase, right? Chasing that musical moment, chasing that feeling, especially younger kids, they want to know what that is. They want to know what we're describing. They want to experience that. And it's not a score on a test. It's something inside them. And when the older kids get it more often, like you're saying, yeah, they get frustrated when they can't have it.
Yeah.
And like you're saying too, it's up to us to program rep where those moments are available.
Yes.
To those
and
kids.
We've got to teach them how to get there, because there are mechanical reasons why
mm-hmm.
that moment didn't happen.
Right.
Right. The pace of the crescendo or wrong notes or all sorts of things. So there's so much pedagogy in place of that. But we also need to teach them to search for that moment. And when it happens, to point it out.
Yeah.
Right? And if they're not even present, they'll have missed it, right? Oh, I was part of that, but I was thinking about that test I failed or, you know, some breakup in a relationship and they missed it, right? So there's so much that needs to be in place for that X factor to really take root, I think.
Absolutely. So even in our first half, there's a lot to unpack. We talk about culture as an organic process that shifts as both the teacher and students work together. As we build it, Michael talks about reteach practice, reteach practice. And that involves us taking the proverbial temperature of our room, not obsessing about it, just being mindful and aware of it. We build that culture with our daily interactions with students, and it's something for which we, as the educators in the room, are largely responsible. If the program were a ship, it can't go anywhere without a crew, but the teacher is still the captain. And to compound that metaphor, the ship functions well when both the crew knows what's expected of them, and, as a result, is generally content. It does take a degree of self-reflection, like Michael's story about his senior concert band and the message from the parent. In our second half, we talk about the physical space, resources that help with our music instruction, and the importance of our own personal wellness as we manage the wellness of our programs. Here's part two. So we're lucky because we get to teach in a different kind of classroom where that facilitates, you know, 40 to 60 to 80 teenagers at a time playing various instruments. So what role does the room's physical setting play in enhancing the room's culture?
I think it can play a significant role. In my experience as a kid, our band room was an old shop. So it was not appropriate. It sounded awful. It didn't really fit anybody, right? We didn't have room. The carpet was all, I think it was indoor-outdoor carpet. I don't know, it might have been 50 years old. So you walk in there and you don't sort of have a sense of value. It's like, well, this is the music program, but nobody cares enough about it to make a music room. So we're lucky we have an older music room and it works for us. It's too small, but it's a music room.
Right.
And we have great gear. So I think if you've got like a dumpy room, that is like the, it says something about the value. And that's not for us as directors to deal with. That's a school division thing. You know, like, do you value this? And of course, you have to pay for it too. But I mean, look at my office, Kenley. Okay, so I'm not the neatest guy in the world. And my contribution to the music library is a problem. And my contribution to the space, the physical space, is a problem. And I think that does affect things. I think that when the kids walk into a really neat and tidy room, it affects the tone, right? If they walk in and it's like a flipping disaster, it affects the tone. And I found that more in junior high than in high school. But because my room in junior high was also, I think, messy and disorganized. It's just kind of who I am. But I had to really try harder there because if it was really out of control, the kids were out of control, right? It was a visual cue. And they, without knowing, responded to that. So I think that makes some difference. Other things, though, that I made note of, that lockers, we have lockers in our room. So that physical, that decision we made to have lockers in the room creates a sense of home base.
Yeah.
Right? So that's, and you don't need like an amazing room to have lockers.
Right.
Right.
And that wasn't even a discussion about belonging or anything. We just made a choice and the belonging happened.
I have a note here. Tidiness creates an illusion of calm. Clutter is mentally messy. I mean, I experienced that. I'm like, oh my God, I need to clean this up because I'm at, I can't deal with it anymore. But the day before I dealt with it just fine. But clutter is mentally messy. Yeah. And the kids are just like us, but we're also, you know, just people. And we bring our isms with us. So is that what you meant?
Yeah. I think when I think about this question in our room, I think about when we stopped using the whiteboard for announcements and we started using it just for messages about wellness or well-being or, you know, the one that always jumps out is James Jordan's It Takes Courage to Be Who You Are. And there are some kids who have just never heard that before.
Yeah.
And again, we're not even teaching it. It's just there and they notice it.
They
do. And they remember. And I remember 3 or 4 years ago, one of our old flute players had a Facebook post that said, here are all of my favorite things that were on that board. And then other kids started commenting. And it was just this chain of things that we'd written over 3 years, a lot of which I'd forgotten about, but they didn't. Right.
They didn't.
And we didn't even, it just never got mentioned. Unless maybe it was in fundamentals and someone brought it up and we would have a little conversation about it. But But those things like signage give the place a different feel than other classrooms. But I'm also thinking about another bulletin board that has, you know, snarky memes on it in our school. And that's really great. That's going to get a different kind of kid.
Yeah.
And off mic, other teachers and I have talked that it doesn't matter that we get every kid, but so long as every kid's gotten somewhere, mm-hmm. then we're okay.
That's right. A place mm-hmm. for everybody.
Exactly. A place for everybody.
You can still teach great music, though, if your room's not amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Because really.
Mm-hmm. Our offices are works in progress. We're going to keep trying. We'll see how far we get.
Kenley's more organized than me.
Only slightly. Okay, so coming back to our own personal spaces, does your personal wellness have a role in maintaining a positive band room culture? And here's maybe a sub-question. Could you describe a time where your personal struggle... We're recording in a school, by the way. Could you describe a time where your personal struggle affected the tone you're trying to set in the room?
I think it does. I think it does. But we know as arts teachers, and I've only ever been an arts teacher, but we know that we give and give and give and give and give and give. So even when we struggle, I think if we're really mindful, we end up giving what our kids need at mm-hmm. our own expense. Like I feel like my personal wellness affects my job less than it does my home life.
Okay.
Right? Because when I'm here, I'm working, it's a different feeling. I have a different construct in place. I'm still myself, but Mr. Brandon mm-hmm. tries to be, you know, I push the best of myself forward. So if I'm feeling tired, now that I'm older, I do it better. When I was younger, I didn't. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm older, I push the best of myself forward. I hope, I try. And when I'm feeling impatient, I share patience. And when I'm feeling snarky and sarcastic, I try to temper that, right? So I feel like if my personal wellness is suffering, likely my suffering will be evident of that at home more than it will be at school, although it's still present. It's still present. There's still times where I speak inappropriately or with a sharper tone than I should have. And that's about wellness. That's mm-hmm. about how I'm feeling. If some kid says something snarky to me, and I don't meet that with something to diffuse it, mm-hmm. and I'm snarky back, well, that's my wellness speaking, probably. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm already in a state of height. Maybe I'm impatient and angry with something else, or I haven't had any time for this. And that story I told about destroying that band because my dad was sick, and that's, you know, in the last 10 years. That's great evidence that my personal wellness mm-hmm. does affect. But I think I get better as I age at I'm working. What do these kids need from me? But I'm not perfect. I make mistakes all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I say things to kids that just the intensity's wrong. The tone is wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, they're snarky with me because they need something, not because they want to be snarky, you know, and I forget that sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think we're a whole big complicated ball of wax. But I do believe in this job that we are required to perform in a particular manner. Mm-hmm. So whether or not I'm mad because of A, B, and C doesn't mean that when I come to this community and educate as a part of a team, the kids in this community, that should be a big part of it, right? I got to try to remember that I'm working. I'm required to give to these kids and support these kids, even if I'm mad that, you know... Like, I can't even think of a reason I'd be mad. There are many, right? We get mad at stuff. So I can't come to school and do that, mm-hmm. right? But I do sometimes.
Yeah.
So of course it does. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's an interesting... I heard that in a workshop just a few months ago here in the school. And it was about, you know, you just have a duty to perform in a particular manner.
Oh, that's good.
You've got a duty to be kind to these kids. You've got a duty to do the best that you can. Mm-hmm. And our best changes, we say to the kids in the band room, you know what, if you're having a bad day, your best may only be 70% of what it was a week ago. And that's true for us too. But we're the adults. We're the ones in charge of the education of this community. Like, that's a big deal, right? So yeah. That's why this job is so hard, I think. So yes, it does affect. My wellness affects. But I got to try to mitigate it.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Well, like the culture, it's something to be managed, right?
It is.
And it's really hard to manage it when there are a lot of demands placed on us. And not just like educational demands, but institutional ones, like where, you know, you teach all morning and then you've got a meeting and then you're helping some kid and you haven't eaten for 9 hours.
Yeah.
You know, like that, things like that come up. Yeah, like, or you're saying you're bringing some, like, one of us or kids or whatever are bringing something from home, and the educational process is having a hard time cutting through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those kids are sure not caring about major and minor thirds that day because they're dealing with something else. And I guess coming back to what you're saying, you know, but we're the adults, right? Like, if chord quality is not happening for them that day, it should still not affect our pedagogy, I suppose.
But then sometimes we find this all the time where, you know what? The chord qualities that we're working on is not the lesson that these kids need today.
Yeah.
So, you know, our own knowledge of what it means to be well and what we need and what we do or don't do, that can find its way into the classroom too. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. if you're like working a band or you're working in a theory class and you don't have them, what's the problem? Well, if the problem is that they're upset, then maybe we need to talk about that. You mm-hmm. know, we're lucky in our curricula that we can take some time to deal with that kind of stuff. And then we can, I don't know, sometimes I find it helps my wellness to share with kids and to have kids share. And then I feel better too, because we've allowed ourselves, you know what, let's just be human for a minute instead of like throwing curriculum around.
Right.
Because that's not important right now. What's important is that you're not okay and something has happened or they've lost someone. Like there's things that happen to these kids. And we're like, you know, no, I said piano. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what, like.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a crazy balance of intensity and, you know what I mean? And managing the demands and the demands on ourselves. We put so much pressure on ourselves. And like, yeah. I'm very aware that as I speak about these concepts that I believe in, that I speak in such an idealistic way. Mm-hmm. And it isn't possible to be these things every day. Mm-hmm. Right?
Well, to be all those things at 100%.
Oh.
You know, like it's managed, like the culture, right?
Right. And that affects our wellness, right? I was mm-hmm. reading something the other day about relaxing one's own expectations of mm-hmm. self, right? Like, I mean, who's harder on you than you? Nobody.
Right.
Right? We understand that. We teach that to kids. Now we give little messages like, just go easy on yourself right now. You're already an overachiever. Like, just relax. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't need to, like, beat yourself up for the 98, but then we do it.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Right? I mean, so.
Mm. And sometimes send mixed messages to kids where, you know, yeah, like, relax, take care of yourself, but these five things are due.
That's right.
Yeah. So
it is mixed messaging.
Yeah. It's
and
it's
then
such a balance.
What's that like in your culture? Oh, I like mixed messaging in my culture. No, that's not good.
No, exactly. But like, and we've talked about this a bit last year, you know, if a theory assignment comes in on Monday instead of Friday, not the end of the world. Because, you know, if a kid says like, oh, I got all these things on Thursday and Wednesday, I just can't do it, but I can do it for you on Monday. Like, okay. Like yeah. That's not a tough compromise.
And it's also real life because I just asked for an extension from Fairway Tours.
Oh.
For a list I should have had in on Monday. And he said, okay, Michael.
Yeah.
I asked for it. That's real life. I had an overdue assignment.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
I asked for permission to have an extension and I got it. It's real life. So we extend that to kids, right?
And I'm sure that just was very stressful.
It was.
Yeah. I also had an overdue assignment this week.
Did you?
And the professor said it was just fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just bring it next time.
You're not avoiding, right? You're not avoiding.
No.
You're navigating the demands.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there needs to be flex.
No, that's right. So speaking of demands and all these things we're talking about with kids, what values do you want to impart to your students when they graduate that are specifically related to our room's culture?
Okay, I have a long list, actually. These are things I think that are important. So when I think about what do I want the program to actually do, knowing that so many of these kids are not going to be professional musicians. Like, they're not going to be pros.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to go to music school. So what are we doing, right? Yeah. Well, it's about all the other things as well, right? So here are the things that I love about music programs that I want to be a part of, you know, ours. Your best is something to strive for. You want to do the best you can. You want to figure out what your best work is and then know if it's actually your best or not.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you have time to do better or whether that's the best you can do in this time frame and now you're happy with that because it's the best you could do. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good skill to have, especially for kids that are so overachievers, right? Where the best is never good enough and they spend their life looking for that 1%. Well, you got 99. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Your best needs to be good enough in your own mind. Be a contributor.
Yeah.
Contribute to something that's meaningful to you, mm-hmm. not that someone else says is meaningful, but that's meaningful to you. So that's kind of figuring out oneself a little bit. Like, what do I like? What's important to me? And then contribute. I put the world needs to be a better place because you're in it. This can be in the way you treat people in your community or your family, the kind of parent you become, your social involvement, your community involvement. Even if you're just walking into the mall and you hold a door for somebody, that's better than if you slam the door.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so you just want to make a difference. And it doesn't always have to be at the United Nations. Right? It can just be at home. It can be with your mom, you emptied the dishwasher, whatever. Mm-hmm. So thinking about contribution that way, working through struggle. Mm-hmm. You got to figure out how to work through struggle. Because if there's struggle, there's learning. So struggle is good, but figuring out how to work through it and not get all wrapped up in the emotions that come with struggle.
Right.
And say, well, I must not be any good at this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no. I mean, anything worth doing is hard. So figure out how to work within a concept of struggle.
Can I jump in on that for a second?
Yeah.
And that's something we've talked a bit about as resilience has come up in educational circles. And one of the conversations that jumps out that we've had is about resilience, but making sure you don't get up too fast, like making sure you stay down long enough to really learn the lesson and then get up with the lesson learned so that you're not struggling through the same problem over and over your whole life. You're not falling down and getting up only to fall down into the same hole. And having what you're saying, having the skills to work through that.
There's a lot of self-awareness in that, right?
Really, yeah.
Like, and that's hard work to, when you're down, to go, now, why am I down? Like, mm-hmm. What is the problem here? Where do I need to focus my attention? Instead of pretending to be somebody.
Right.
And we see, fall down again and again.
And we see kids doing that. Like, why do I keep getting back into this problem? Why does this keep happening to me?
Yeah.
And legitimately, sometimes bad things keep happening to them. But other times, if we can help them be self-aware of maybe how they're actions or thoughts or ways of looking at the world are becoming these negative self-fulfilling prophecies for them. Maybe they could change that mindset. Not all the time, but sometimes.
Well, a lot of them are, it's just thoughts.
Yeah.
Right? Thoughts about self, thoughts about why they think things are the way they are. And sometimes things are real, and sometimes we make a lot up in our head.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe the things in our head. And they're just thoughts, and thoughts can be changed. Mindsets can be changed.
Mm-hmm.
I've got down long-term planning mm-hmm. and goals, right? We're so lucky in our area that it's not instant gratification, right? That there's, I mean, lots of education is like that, but how do you put this together over a long time? What does mm-hmm. that look like? What does it feel like? How do you get through it to the end product? Mentorship, leadership, accountability, integrity, respect, focusing on progress, growth, and process, and not just the end.
Yeah.
Right? Because the end is this moment that is fleeting, and the mm-hmm. process could be a lifetime, right? You know, looking back and go, well, let's just look at what I've done here. And you look back and go, holy crow, like, look what has happened here. But the performance lasted 9 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But the recognition of the process and the growth and feeling good about that, allowing that to take up sometimes more space than the product. Because I've done a lot of performances personally where I put in so much time and then I really didn't perform that well.
Yeah.
Like in the end, like, oh my God, that was terrible. It was full of mistakes and like it was just awful. But then I look back and I'm like, well, your process was pretty good. You had some performance anxiety, mm-hmm. you know, or you didn't sleep or whatever. You know, you look for reasons to blame. But not just looking at the end product, but thinking about, well, how did I grow and change? Am I better because of it, even though I made like 4 mistakes
mm-hmm.
or 400, right? I make lots of mistakes. A good one I like, I don't know where I read this one, but I found it this year. Rest and reflection are a big part of your achievement.
Mm.
Rest and reflection, an integral part of achieving goals.
Mm-hmm.
The whip comes out, right? Faster, work harder, more persistent, all those good things,
mm-hmm.
more perseverance. Well, when is it time? You gotta rest.
Yeah.
Right? When do you reflect? You reflect in silence. You don't reflect when you're trying your hardest. Rest and reflection.
That's good.
Emotional self-awareness, that's important to me. Seeing others, I want them to see each other. And when they leave here, I want them to see people, right? Eye contact, right? We practice that sometimes in the band room.
Yeah.
You know, look at me. No, make eye contact with me. Look here. I know it feels weird, doesn't it? Uh-huh. You need to practice that. Let's practice that. Just that. I mean, go into a job interview, you're going to get the job or not. If you can't even look them in the eye, mm-hmm. that shares a certain energy, and we can teach that in the music room.
We sure can.
Right? Being able to reflect on oneself, one's actions, beliefs, behaviors, habits. Like, why can't I get this part? Well, you're only wishing. You know? You're just wishing that you had the part. You're not actually planning and executing a plan.
Right.
And the last one's my favorite, have a desire for personal growth. Mm-hmm. I want to get better. And I don't just want to get better at music. I want to be aware of my own growth as I live, right? And change and evolve. Because that feels really good. And those of us who are older, right? And by that I mean not 15. Mm-hmm. We are aware of our own growth. We think. I don't know whether everyone is. I'd like to teach them that it's something to be aware of. Mm-hmm. Right? And we can do that in the music room.
We sure can. I love that you mentioned that you couldn't remember where you read something, because it leads us into the next question. Are there any books that you believe are essential reading for establishing and maintaining a positive classroom culture?
I got a lot of books on this list.
Great.
It starts with Joe Alsobrook's Pathways. You know that's my favorite book.
Oh, yeah.
I read that book a long time ago when I was teaching at Lockport School, and what an epiphany I had in that summer when I read that, because I really was accidentally creating a culture. Mm-hmm. I was teaching music. I was doing the best I could. I was enjoying it. My program, I think, was okay. Kids were, I think, were happy. But I wasn't ever thinking about culture the way I do now. So that book, Pathways, was just like revolutionary for me. He just talks about the five gifts that you give kids. I can't remember what they all are, but some of them are love, attention, boundaries, fun, accomplishment, I think, mm-hmm. are the five. So, I mean, if you have a program where you've got those five things going on in some form, like you pay attention to them. Love doesn't mean that you love them like their family. You show them, you make them feel appreciated, like they matter. You know, boundaries, kids need boundaries. The enjoyment factor, it has to be enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine music not being enjoyable. That has to be there. And then the accomplishment, like what happens. Anything by Ed Lisk, I really like Ed Lisk's stuff. That's pedagogy and concepts. So I use a lot of his stuff. I teach scales using his strategies. He's got a book called The Intangibles of Music, which I really like, which is talking about teaching intensity and meaning. Mm-hmm. He's got some really great language about teaching intensity. How do you teach meaning? Like it just needs more meaning. Well, the 16-year-old goes, okay, what does that mean on this piece of pipe?
Absolutely.
Right? What are the mechanics about? What? Remember, we went to the festival, and one of the adjudicators at one point, it just needs more hope. And I just dreamed of the day where she was going to teach me what that meant. Like, I could feel it needed more hope. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to do it. How do you teach hope, Kenley?
I actually used that in a paper I was writing for my theory class. That specific example, because we were talking about a variety of points, of arrival points. And I think what she meant 8 years later, or whatever this is now, was to arrive more at the major chord and not move past the chord, whatever it was. But I thought a lot about what you were describing, mm-hmm. play with more hope, and like,
what's the mechanics of that?
What does that mean?
Yeah. How do mm-hmm. you teach that? So Ed Lisk talks about some things like that that I like. Peter Boonshaft has a couple of books that I like, Teaching Music with Promise, Teaching Music with Passion. That's more on the inspiration side. Tim Lawson-Heiser, of course, we know. When you need a little bit of inspiration, sometimes those writings just kind of give you what you need. You don't need to read the whole thing. You might just need to read for 20 minutes. And you're like, mm-hmm. yeah, you know what? I do believe in that, or whatever you might need. Intelligent Music Teaching, Robert A. Duke, was really good for me. That's mm-hmm. about pedagogy.
One of my favorites.
It's good. Again, I don't want to read it all at once, because sometimes it's a bit dry reading about what we love. But there's stuff in there to be highlighted and then to simmer about. David Newell has a book called Teaching Rhythm, which I didn't find until maybe about 5 years ago when we were talking about teaching rhythm. That mm-hmm. book was the inspiration for that. And he's got great strategies for teaching compound time. I couldn't teach compound time to save my life in junior high. Mm-hmm. And then I use his strategy and, oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
So that's a must read. I really like that. The Art of Wind Playing by Arthur Weisberg was really helpful with articulation.
Okay.
So as I'm struggling to even understand what articulation was, this book was very, very helpful. Sometimes I just thought articulation was staccato, mm-hmm. you know, accented. I'm like, no, it's about the beginning, the middle, and the end, and then unifying all of that within the ensemble. I mean, it was very valuable. I got The Music Lesson by Victor Rutan in there because it provides a different new perspective that one may not have thought about. Amazing life lessons in a musical setting. The Basics in Rhythm by Garwood Whaley.
Oh, yeah.
I use that for rhythm all the time. That's not anything to read. That's a resource. And then I did read a long time ago, very helpful. Remember on the board I put a horse, a king. Do you remember that? It was like some text, and we were talking about where to put the emphasis.
Oh, yes.
And relating that to the musical phrase that comes out of Cassell's and the Art of Interpretation.
Oh, okay.
By David Bloom. So lots of really amazing resources out there. Really.
That's where there's the crescendo under the words and
that's
the dynamics.
Right.
Yeah, okay, I remember that. That was good, yeah.
Yeah.
I've gotten to say it. It all made sense.
It helps.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're trying to teach a 16-year-old something interpretive that my life experience lends itself to doing well, how do you get a 15-year-old to do that?
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. All right. Last thing. Is there anything else that you'd like to discuss that you believe is critical when talking about band room culture?
I think I kind of already said this, but I have written down here when I was thinking about these questions, culture is personality driven. And it means that a program's culture is directly affected by what is important to the teacher,
mm-hmm.
right? It gives you the freedom to build whatever you want, but it's going to reflect you. And sort of trusting that what you believe is right for you and your program culturally is right.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't have to be, you know how we play the comparison game all the time. It just has to be yours, mm-hmm. right? You and I are taking care of this program while we're here. Someone took care of it before we got here.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else will take care of it when we're through with it. And we just have to make it right for us, right? Because it's individuals, and in our case, two collaborating to create something that's meaningful for both of us,
mm-hmm.
right? Not what we think we should do, although there are some of those things. You should figure out how to teach rhythm. You
yeah.
should figure out how to be nice to kids or manage your wellness. But it really has to be a reflection of us, I think, and what's important to us. There's no right, but we can steal great ideas that resonate with us. And then go build it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's just it. Go build it and be patient. You know, we make 5-year plans.
Yeah, make a lot of 5-year plans.
We're not going to do this year. This is like, how do we want this to evolve? Like, what are we doing here? What's important to us?
Mm-hmm.
And then being patient and being willing to celebrate the good things that kids do and the good things that we do. And that gives us motivation to keep going. But the understanding that it's us at work,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
And figuring out what's right for us.
Yeah, that's a great place to leave off. Thanks so much for speaking with me today.
It's been fun.
That's been my conversation with Michael Brandon. How does that viewpoint make you feel? Does it support what you believe, or did it challenge you? Did you pick up any strategies that you might use in your program? As educators, one of the best things we can do is talk to one another and share ideas, problems we're having, or strategies that work for us. If you skip the intro episode and want some more context for these conversations, you can head back in the episode list and listen to that. But teachers talking to one another is essentially what this series is about. If you'd like to read the cumulative research, the paper is being published in 2 parts in Canadian Winds, starting with fall 2018. If you don't get the journal, get in touch with me and we'll put something together. Thank you so much for listening. For more information, you can head to bandtogetherpodcast.com or my own personal website at kenleychristofferson.com, and the spelling's in the show notes just in case. Follow me on Twitter at kenley_k or on Facebook at facebook.com/kenley. Thanks again to Michael Brandon, and a preemptive thanks to Alexis Silver, who is featured in our next episode, available on the website, Apple Podcasts, or Google Play. The intro music is my piece, The Meeting Place, performed by the Arizona State University Wind Ensemble and conducted by Dr. Jason Kasler. The break music is Matters of Kindness, also written by me, performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band under the direction of Dr. Richard Main. I'm Kenley Christofferson. Until next time.